From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because life and truth matter. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast, we present an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast in which Hank talked with Mary Eberstadt, author of It's Dangerous to Believe, Religious Freedom and Its Enemies. Here now is Hank Hanegraaff.
And welcome to another edition of Hank Unplugged, talking to some of the most significant people on the planet. And today is no exception. I'm talking to Mary Eberstadt. She's an American essayist. She's a novelist. She's the author of many books. We'll probably talk about some of those books today. And she has an incredible gift with the pen. Her writing has appeared in magazines, including Time Magazine, The Wall Street Journal, The Washington Post, National Review, The Weekly Standard, and I could go on and on. And then in March 2017, Mary was named Senior Research Fellow at the Faith and Reason Institute in Washington, D.C. And Mary has been on our broadcast a number of times because I was so excited about one of her books. I'm excited about all of her books, but a book titled It's Dangerous to Believe, Religious Freedom and Its Enemies. Yeah, now we'll talk about that some today as well. But we want to talk about what's happening. There's a great paradigm shift taking place in Western civilization, and we have to wake up to its realities. There's a brand new orthodoxy afoot. And interestingly enough, we have sort of an unholy alliance between illiberal liberalism and illicit Islam. Again, we'll talk about all of that and more. Mary, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Hank. It's great to be talking to you again.
I'm looking forward to the conversation. You're one of my favorite guests on the Bible Answer Man broadcast. I think the work that you did in It's Dangerous to Believe is one of the great contributions to Western civilization. That's a big platitude. But what I mean by that is you're opening people's eyes to two things, I think. One is something that's squarely in the blind spot of the West, and that is the mass genocide of Christians in the East. And then there's a change, as it were, taking place in Western civilization where Christian ideologies are being replaced by a new kind of fanatical religious ideology. It's not as though we're going to materialism or secularism at its base, but we're going to a new ideology that has a lot to do with the sexual revolution.
Yes, absolutely, Hank. There's so much going on out there, but I think what's really new and unexpected is this development of what I call a secularist religion. Now, we have seen secularist religions or secular ideologies that operate like religion before. We saw this most notably in the case of communism, which eventually fell, at least as an idea that could claim the loyalties of millions of people. Of course, it's still in force in some places, but it doesn't have that sort of quasi-religious claim to people's loyalty. Well, what we're seeing now, and I think completely unexpected, for the past 50 years, since the invention of the birth control pill specifically, which gave rise to the sexual revolution, we are seeing a secularist religion that is developing and more sophisticated year by year, that is grounded in theology about the sexual revolution. Now, I don't think religious believers saw this coming. I think we're all acquainted with the kind of ferocity and prejudice that Christian expression can be greeted with in the public square these days. I think we can think of many examples. We can get into some of them if you like. But as to where this hostility is coming from, I think we have to understand this new rival faith to Christianity. the people who believe that the sexual revolution is paramount and that sexual expression is the most morally protected form of expression are absolutists about their beliefs. And their beliefs are, of course, diametrically opposed to what conventional, traditional Christian teaching is and always has been. So that's the conflict. That's what's at the root of the conflict that we see in these Supreme Court cases about religious expression. That's what's at the root of not wanting, say, a football coach to drop to his knees at the end of a game. In case after case, we're seeing the sort of bubbles on the surface, and I don't mean to make light of that, of a much deeper conflict. And it's a conflict between people who believe in the good book, that is traditional Judeo-Christianity, and people who believe in the figurative book that's being written about belief in the sexual revolution.
So if you believe in this figurative book, there are some maxims, and those maxims include if you are against abortion, you are therefore anti-female. If you oppose same-sex marriage, therefore you hate people attracted to same-sex. If you are against gender fluidity, then you are against those who want that open freedom of expression. So this kind of puts Christians in a box. Once you turn the tables in this way, and if people do not understand that this is illogical, they immediately think, well, anti-abortion? Well, no wonder, you're a bigot. And then there comes this great tidal wave of having to unseat Christianity, because it is the main force for evil in Western civilization. So it's no longer seen as that which gave rise to jurisprudence, that which gave rise to science, that which gave rise to the arts, etc., but it's seen as that which is the ultimate enemy. In fact, an enemy that is far greater than Islam, because Islam is seen, by contrast, to be a religion of peace and tolerance.
Yes. When I say that there is a secularist religion that's developed in the Western world, certainly I'm not saying that it's always logically consistent. I think those examples that you gave are spot on. So for instance, let's talk for a minute about abortion. Pro-life advocates get smeared routinely with this label of being anti-woman. It's ridiculous. If you look at the debate, who is really standing for women here? In the case of abortion, we have something going on called gendercide, and it's happening around the world. Girl fetuses are aborted at much higher rates than male fetuses, especially in societies that prize, depend on having a son. So who is standing up for women? Is it the people who are saying, the more abortion, the better? Or is it the people who are saying there is something immoral going on here? And that's just one example of the sort of illogic. You pointed out some other very good ones that riddles this secularist religion. Of course, it's not true that in virtue of opposing same-sex marriage, Christians oppose people with various erotic leanings one way or the other. Of course, it's not true that they're haters, but these very harmful words, hater and bigot, have been introduced by believers in the new secularist faith in order to shut down Christian argument. People don't want to have a discussion about these things if they are adherents of the Church of the Sexual Revolution. I think they know that 2,000 years of Christian thinking has probably given people some pretty good arguments on the Christian side, and they don't want to deal with that. And that's where these labels are coming from. They are used to stop debate and stop discussion in what the other side fears would be a losing conversation for them.
You sort of mentioned the moniker thinking. I mean, perhaps that's the problem. I mean, people aren't thinking anymore. I mean, we're being bombarded with advertisement. We see incredible chaos around the world, and then we go to an advertisement. We never really think, and I think so often that's the problem. If you look at what's going on in the campus craziness around the world, you have people who don't think, they don't actually engage the arguments. They simply have a particular bias. They fly with the bias instead of having an interchange of ideas or real dialogue.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's always human nature, Hank, to want to take the easy way out. We also have to keep in mind that, of course, the internet inflames everything and everybody. But that said, what there's very little awareness of these days is the harm that's being inflicted on fellow citizens, fellow neighbors, fellow family members by these labels of hater and bigot, where often all that is meant is that you follow the teachings of Jesus Christ. And this is really something new in American history. One way I think of it is that we used to be a society that feared God, and now we are a society where people jeer God and feel morally purposeful when they do that. So this is a real civilizational change. We have to be aware of it, I think, and we have to understand that what Christians today are up against in the Western world is not just some polite disagreement with people who have moved past Christianity. No, what they're up against is a real mortal struggle with the theology of the sexual revolution, because people who believe in that theology think and understand that Christianity is the biggest living threat.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk about this a little bit, because in many ways, Christians are going to be the people that have to pick up the pieces in the end. Transgenderism, a classic case in point. You have a particular narrative that is being communicated in classrooms. I mean, talking about kids that are 6, 7, 8 years old who are being told that perhaps they're a girl trapped in a boy's body or a boy trapped in a girl's body. And therefore, they really don't know what their gender identity is. They'll probably find that out later on. Or sometimes they're told, you know, if you feel like you're a girl trapped in a boy's body, you ought to be taking some kind of drug. You ought to start looking into doing something about the body that you have. And then that body, at a very early age, and there's some chilling examples of this, starts to be tampered with. And even though you can tamper with it in an artificial, superficial way, ultimately, you can't change biology on a cellular level. So all of that is simply to say, Mary, I mean, I think what's going on here is we're sowing to the wind, we're going to reap the whirlwind. And if, in fact, Christians understand what's going on, we can be there to pick up the pieces, because the social experiment, I think, is devastating for people created in the Imago Dei, the image and likeness of God.
Absolutely, Hank. And this is another side of the whole discussion that people aren't grasping. That is that in any other context, if what were being defended were not somehow the sexual revolution, the idea that we are all sexually malleable in all dimensions, and that we get to call the shots about what we do with our bodies. If it were about anything but that, and I were to say to you, Hank, I've just found out that there are medical experiments being run on children, you know, in a very untoward way, giving them drugs, changing basic things about them, surgery, which some people would call mutilation. If I were to say those things, in any other context but the sexual revolution, people would say, that's terrible. We can't have that. But somehow when it comes to the terrible human fallout of the revolution, people who want to defend it at all costs are blind to the damage that's being done out there. And I think part of our jobs as people who do not believe that theology is to bring that damage to the attention of people, even understanding that they have deep reasons for not wanting to see the damage. I'll give you another example. In the name of the sexual revolution and its growing theology, there is more and more commercial surrogacy, you know, meaning people who hire themselves out very often in the third world and are paid Very often by couples for reasons of the sexual revolution, to have children. Now, this is another experiment that is probably not going to look so good in the rearview mirror of history. And there's a lot more out there that social science has documented. Of course, we know about the damages to kids from broken homes. And in saying that, I'm not pointing a finger at anyone. I mean, Christians are always accused of doing that. That's not the case. But we all know the kinds of educational outcomes, behavioral outcomes, et cetera, and the risks that are raised in particularly homes without a dad. So there is a lot that has happened on account of the sexual revolution that is not to the credit of the revolution. And it should be fair game to insist on pointing that out.
Don't go away. In just a few moments, we'll rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with cultural critic Mary Eberstadt. Religious freedom is under assault as never before. A country founded on freedom of speech and religious belief is being changed from within by activists hostile to both. Is this what we want America to be? Read the book by Mary Eberstadt, It's Dangerous to Believe, Religious Freedom and Its Enemies. To receive your copy of It's Dangerous to Believe as our thanks for your gift to the ongoing work of the Christian Research Institute, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Equip.org. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly with more of this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Of Nancy Piercy's recent book, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality, Professor Robert P. George of Princeton University says, liberal secularist ideology rests on a mistake, and Nancy Piercy puts her finger right on it. In embracing abortion, euthanasia, homosexual conduct and relationships, transgenderism and the like, liberal secularism is philosophically as well as theologically untenable. Piercy is precisely clear about what makes humans valuable. Don't just read, master, love thy body. To receive your hardcover copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-transforming outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. Supporting the work of the Christian Research Institute is now as easy as sending a text message. Here's how you can help by texting your gift directly to CRI. To make a one-time gift to help equip fellow believers through the ongoing work of CRI, text TRUTH in all capital letters to 41444. That's TRUTH to 41444. To become a CRI support team member and make a difference on a regular basis, text STANDING in all capital letters to 91999. Again, that is STANDING to 91999. We do what we do here at CRI because life and truth matter. And all of our outreaches are made possible by people like you standing shoulder to shoulder with us to make a difference for now and for eternity. God bless you. On this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff, we're bringing to you an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast in which Hank talked with cultural critic Mary Eberstadt. Hostile secularism is winning battles and gaining ground, but this is hardly the time for Christians to retreat. Find out how to respond to the growing secular tsunami by reading Mary Eberstadt's book, It's Dangerous to Believe, Religious Freedom and Its Enemies. Receive your copy of It's Dangerous to Believe as our thanks for supporting the life-changing outreaches of the Christian Research Institute by calling 888-7000-CRI or visit our website at www.equip.org. Let's rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and Mary Eberstadt in their conversation on this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast.
Just thinking extemporaneously here, I mean, you're one of the brightest people on the planet, in my view. I mean, I just love to read what you write. I love the gift that God has given you. But you had to go through some kind of metamorphosis. I mean, were you always on the track that you're on right now, or how did you get on this track?
Oh, well, that's an unexpected question, but I guess that's what we get for being unplugged, right?
That's exactly right. We're going to call it unhinged at one time.
It was partly just from using the evidence of my senses, Hank. And, you know, in the long run, I'm an optimist about all these things. I'd say a short-run pessimist and a long-run optimist. Why? Because there's now so much damage out there that people are looking for alternatives to the way that many modern people live now. They're looking for alternatives to the hookup culture, to drugs and alcohol abuse, et cetera. All these things that are prevalent on especially secular campuses these days, and which I saw on my secular campus, like many other people, a lot of people are looking for some kind of way out from all that. And so paradoxically, I think what we're seeing out there is as the hostility rises to traditional Christian expression, we are also seeing the growth, including on campuses, of various Christian groups, tradition-minded groups, and other small platoons that are trying to stand in contradiction to the larger trends out there. And so that's a roundabout way of saying it was partly by finding those little platoons, in my case, finding people who felt like they were refugees from all this, that got me thinking that this was something that should be studied and put into writing.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, and I think you've put this into writing as well, I mean, you think about same-sex sexuality, this is not just a Christian issue. I mean, if you look at the sociological metrics, they point uniformly to the fact that gender-differentiated parenting is best for children. So if you really care about the welfare of children, you wouldn't be on this mad rush towards redefining the nuclear family or disrupting the nuclear family. I mean, this is one of the core values of Black Lives Matter. I mean, you look on their website and that's exactly what they say. They use the moniker disrupting the nuclear family. And this seems to me to be where the real hate speech lies.
Well, yes, this is another thing that for some reason hasn't gotten the attention that it deserves. When we talk about how parents are entitled to children somehow, you know, as if it's something in the Bill of Rights, what people tend not to talk about is what children are entitled to or are arguably entitled to. It's always that the adult, quote, wants the child and has a right to the child. But what about the children in these situations? What I see is that there are people in this world who will purposely take away from a child the right to a mother or the right to a father. In other words, there are people who will purposely deprive a child of either a mother or a father, say in the case of same-sex marriage. Why do we think that's okay? Who wants to look that 12-year-old in the eyes down the road and explain why you don't have a mommy? this is an example of where if we really get on the ground of these cases, we see heartbreaking things that don't show up in discussions by, you know, well-heeled, well-funded groups that are engaged in legal battles over these things. But if we look at these things through the eyes of the children who are being affected by them, then I think we can't help but be moved in a direction to say, this is wrong.
Yeah, if you look at this whole idea of a secularist religion, there are high priests that come to mind. I mean, you think about Gloria Steinem or Margaret Mead, certainly Margaret Sanger. And I want to single her out for a moment because here was a person who was very much on the vanguard of the eugenics movement. And today we have a new hyper-eugenics movement afoot. I was reading a couple of months ago about what's going on in Iceland, where they're saying they're now almost 100% Down syndrome baby-free. They've almost eradicated Down syndrome babies through abortion and the like. And that's supposed to be a great thing. That's being lauded as a step forward. In fact, Richard Dawkins, probably the most influential materialist on the planet today, says that it is, quite frankly, immoral to bring a Down syndrome child into the world. So we have this new move towards a hyper-eugenics that eradicates those that are thought to be unfit in society, and in their place, we're looking towards designer babies.
Yeah, it's a great point, Hank. And there is an implicit cruelty, to say nothing of a lack of diversity in one's outlook, that would wipe children like that from the face of the earth. I'm so glad you brought up Margaret Sanger. We live in a moment where there are upset, agitated groups that want to pull down statues of Confederates. And they are making their argument in the public square, and I'm glad that they are. They aren't just making emotive appeals. They're making an argument about how things have changed and how we have developed morally as a people. So whatever you think of their case, it is astonishing to me that Margaret Sanger hasn't been torn down from her podiums all over America. As a matter of fact, consider this. Planned Parenthood, for years and years, gave annual awards, I think the last ones were in 2015, called the Maggies, and they were named for Margaret Sanger, to journalists who had written pro-choice pieces, et cetera, and to other figures who had somehow come into the, quote, pro-choice fold. All right, let's look at that for a minute. Margaret Sanger was unflinching in her insistence on the inferiority of certain other people. She wanted to keep down the numbers of certain other people. She believed very much that there were fit people and unfit people. And guess what? Fit people looked like her, and unfit people looked like, well, fill in the blank. So it's very hard to understand why Margaret Sanger gets a pass in a moment of extra attention to racism and extra moral sensitivity to racism in America's past, when she was the embodiment of this kind of eugenic thinking. So again, what we're seeing is that in any other context besides defending the sexual revolution, no one would be getting away with this, but Margaret Sanger's getting away with it because she is a paragon of the revolution. She is the equivalent of a secular saint. I think people who stand against what she stood for should be proud of themselves, and I think that those of us who do are on the right side.
You know, what's really interesting about this is I've looked into this a little bit over the years, and you look at this being a huge, huge issue in the United States of America. I mean, you talk about a really virulent evil in America, and there have been many, but this seems to me to be at the top of the list. And the odd thing about it is that this was considered progressive before World War II. in universities like Stanford and Princeton and Harvard, this was considered very, very progressive. Legislation was passed, pro-eugenics legislation, passed in blue states ranging from California to New York. You had prestigious people. It wasn't just Margaret Sanger on this bandwagon, but they had bought into an ideology that said that the unfit were affecting the gene pool such that the fit did not survive as well. And so the only thing we could do is make sure that we got rid of those that were unfit. And as you've correctly said, the unfit were oftentimes people that did not look like the stereotypical America. There were blacks oftentimes, there were Jews, there were people who had some kind of a physical malady. But this was something that was orthodoxy within America, and it really didn't see its demise for a while, at least, until it reached full bloom in the genocidal German death camps. And then it sort of vanished into the night, and no one wants to say that they had any association with this eugenic movement. We're sort of quietly paying reparations for the harm that we did to blacks. I mean, we're doing that in North Carolina, for example. But most people don't want to own up to the fact that this was an ideology that was uncritically bought into that devastated lives, and we're now seeing history repeat itself in other places.
Yes, and once again, Christianity should get some credit for being on the right side of that issue. It's Christianity infused with Judaism that taught humanity that all human beings are equal in the sight of God. That's a revolutionary idea. Christianity, correctly applied, should get some credit for that insight. Eugenics wasn't some kind of Christian thing. It was a progressive thing, as you correctly point out. And when progressives today wonder why there are people who are, you know, standing, quote, on the wrong side of history, it's because we don't want to be standing wherever they are. Certainly not in the case of eugenics. Similarly, Hank, I think Christianity gets such a bad rap for being bad on women somehow. It was Christianity that introduced the very idea that men and women were morally equal, so morally equal that consent was required for marriage. This is a very early Christian idea, and again, it's revolutionary. Now, were there equal outcomes? No, of course not. Were there, you know, equal economic statuses throughout history? No. But the idea that a woman's soul was just as important as a man's and that it would be jeopardized if she couldn't freely consent to marriage, or that the marriage would be invalid without both parties freely willing it, that's a fantastic, liberating idea. It's one of the most liberating ideas ever to appear in humanity. And again, that's a Christian idea. So part of what I'm trying to say is that I think, for reasons we all understand, a lot of traditional believers have been in a defensive crouch, right? Because they weren't expecting how ferocious the winds against them would become. They weren't expecting all of these religious liberty cases suddenly proliferating across the land. They weren't expecting that they wouldn't be able to practice their faith without public ostracism.
We'll pick up Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with cultural critic Mary Eberstadt in just a few moments. The Bible Answer Man broadcast and CRI's growing array of outreaches have never been more needed than they are today. And that's why we won't be shy in asking you to stand shoulder to shoulder with the Christian Research Institute through your persistent prayers and generous financial support. Stand with Hank Hanegraaff and CRI in the battle for life and truth. And as our thanks for your support, you'll receive a copy of It's Dangerous to Believe, Religious Freedom and Its Enemies by Mary Eberstadt. Call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support CRI's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. We'll be back after the break with more of the Hank Unplugged podcast interview with Mary Eberstadt on this special edition of the Bible Answer Man. Supporting the work of the Christian Research Institute is now as easy as sending a text message. Here's how you can help by texting your gift directly to CRI. To make a one-time gift to help equip fellow believers through the ongoing work of CRI, text TRUTH in all capital letters to 41444. That's TRUTH to 41444. To become a CRI support team member and make a difference on a regular basis, text STANDING in all capital letters to 91999. Again, that is STANDING to 91999. We do what we do here at CRI because life and truth matter. And all of our outreaches are made possible by people like you standing shoulder to shoulder with us to make a difference for now and for eternity. God bless you. Of Nancy Piercy's recent book, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality, Professor Robert P. George of Princeton University says, liberal secularist ideology rests on a mistake, and Nancy Piercy puts her finger right on it. In embracing abortion, euthanasia, homosexual conduct and relationships, transgenderism and the like, liberal secularism is philosophically as well as theologically untenable. Piercy is precisely clear about what makes humans valuable. Don't just read, master, love thy body. To receive your hardcover copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-transforming outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org. The Christian Research Journal is CRI's award-winning magazine, combining eye-catching design with well-researched articles to equip believers in doctrine, defense, and discernment. The Christian Research Journal's primary commitment is to contend earnestly for the faith that was once for all delivered to the saints. In keeping with this commitment, the journal's mission is both evangelistic and pastoral, furthering the proclamation and defense of the historic gospel of Jesus Christ, and helping his followers distinguish between essential Christian doctrine and doctrine that is peripheral, aberrant, or heretical. In an age of subjectivism and moral relativism, may Christians ground their faith and values in the objective, reliable testimony of Holy Scripture. Start your subscription to the Christian Research Journal today. Call 888-7000-CRI or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Now, let's rejoin Hank Hanegraaff and Mary Eberstadt in their conversation on this special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast.
I think for reasons we all understand, a lot of traditional believers have been in a defensive crouch, right? Because they weren't expecting how ferocious the winds against them would become. They weren't expecting all of these religious liberty cases suddenly proliferating across the land. They weren't expecting that they wouldn't be able to practice their faith without public ostracism. But the defensive crouch is not the answer when what you're in possession of are truths that other people are losing sight of, that have been a boon to humanity. So be proud of standing on the right side of the eugenics discussion, for example. Be proud of standing against what Margaret Sanger and all the other people like her stood for. I think we can, without patting ourselves on the back, we can be emboldened to know some of the good that Christianity has done out there in the world.
Yeah, you know, I think in some way, Mary, though, Christians are shooting themselves in the foot in our culture. I mean, you have many Christians that are saying that the universe is 6,000 years old. You have Christians, or at least pseudo-Christians, holding up signs saying God hates fags. And you also have Christians today predicting the end of the world based on a misreading of biblical passages. In other words, they don't know how to read the Bible in the sense in which it's intended. In fact, they don't even know how to read literature in the sense in which it's intended. But even beyond that, I think that there's another side of the coin with respect to the Christian church, which is that we're buying into a cultural narrative uncritically. So many of the things that you're talking about, that you're bringing to the fore, just about the time you're bringing it to the fore, many Christians are already capitulating. So you hear all these slogans, gay or straight here, there's no hate here, for example, as though again, is this false dichotomy that somehow or other this whole equation involves hating gays. And so the cultural narrative has seeped into the church. So you have a fundamentalism on the left and a fundamentalism on the right, both of which I think are not palatable with the kinds of maxims or the kind of paradigm shift that you're looking to affect in this world.
Yes, I couldn't agree more, Hank. Essentially what's happening is that we have these two religions, the religion of the sexual revolution and the religion of Christianity. And you are quite right. In the face of this kind of hostility we see now, a lot of Christians are preemptively capitulating. They won't put it that way, but they are censoring themselves. And in effect, what they're saying is, well, I'm going to carry my Christian passport for some purposes, and then I've got this other passport to the sexual revolution that I'm going to use for other purposes so that nobody gets mad at me. And, you know, that's the kind of incoherence out of which comes these ideas of, well, yes, I'm a Christian, but I think the churches are wrong about X, Y, and Z, where X, Y, and Z always have to do with the sexual revolution, right? Nobody says the church is wrong to teach against stealing. You know, it is always coming down to traditional Judeo-Christian morality about sex. So a lot of people are trying to have it both ways. And I think part of the decline of Christianity that is documented in surveys, the decline that's documented particularly among the young, is coming partly from this place that is not like from a philosophical rethinking by a great many people who then wake up and say, oh, that Christian thing is all, you know, very yesterday. And we don't need it. We don't believe it. We've showed all the logical problems with it. No. Where the fall off in attendance and practice is coming from in part is that people are afraid. They value the opinions of their secular neighbors. They want their kids to get into the kinds of, say, private schools and colleges and other sorts of rarefied environments where their opinions won't be a problem for them. And, you know, it goes on and on, but I think a lot of people are censoring themselves preemptively so that they can fit better and in a less, you know, with less friction into this secular society where increasingly the religion that is influential is the religion of the sexual revolution.
Yeah, so I want to turn a little bit of a corner, although this is sort of on the same topic. I just wrote a book called Muslim, What You Need to Know About the World's Fastest Growing Religion. The thing that's interesting about this is that I've started talking a little bit about this on the radio. And immediately, some of our Canadian affiliates have had trouble because the Canadian Parliament has passed an anti-Islamophobia motion, and now everything's being examined. In other words, they've got to hold back our show, play a tape show, because the idea is I might say something that is Islamophobic. And I want to talk about that for a moment, because it seems to me that when you have an imprint like HarperCollins, you know, obviously they weren't going to publish a book unless it was bulletproof. And, you know, I've been known for my fastidious research, so I don't come off half-cocked. And essentially what I'm saying in that book, I mean, there's a lot I'm saying in the book, but one of the things I say in the book is that there are millions and millions of peace-loving Muslims. And I actually start the book out with an example of me being in Iran, walking the streets of Iran in the middle of the night as I'm speaking at the University of Tehran. I mean, I got jet lag, and then at night I'm walking the streets of Tehran. I'm met with nothing but acts of kindness. So I've seen peace-loving Muslims. I've had a Muslim live in my home for a year. So I can attest to the fact that there are millions and millions of peace-loving Muslims. But on the other hand, The point that I'm making, and this is where the Islamophobia comes in, at least in perception, is that Islam, by its very DNA, is not a religion of peace and tolerance. That's just a historical fact borne out over 1,400 years of human history. But now, just saying that, going against the cultural narrative, and the narrative, I suppose, has inculcated in it the idea that if you say Islam is not a religion of peace and tolerance, then you're exacerbating hostilities that might otherwise lay dormant. So now in Canada, I'm being censored, as it were, because anything that goes against the cultural narrative is now considered hate speech.
It is a very interesting question, Hank, exactly what you're raising about the relationship between the kind of anti-Christian hostility that we see and the anxiety over radical Islam that has been felt by most people in the Western world since 9/11, and I think increasingly with what's happening in Europe right now. Some years ago, I wrote an essay called The Scapegoats Among Us, and it made the case that part of where this particularly belligerent anti-Christianity is coming from is that there is this free-floating desire to do something about religion, but only about the religion it's safe to attack. So part of what's happening is, why are we seeing all of this anti-Christianity? Why are school kids, to give an example from my book, like why were school kids in a couple of elementary schools kept from putting toys in little shoeboxes and sending them to kids, you know, poor kids in the third world? Well, the reason is that Christianity is safe to attack. The safe in the sense that no one's going to fear for their personal security by Christian bashing in the public square. It's safe to do that all over, as we can see just by turning on the television. So there is a dynamic afoot here, I think, where the less penalty there is to doing this, the more we're going to see of it, because Christianity is perceived as the religion that will roll over and let this happen.
I think even more, if I might say this, it seems to me that since Christianity is the dominant worldview in the West was shaped by a Christian worldview. We're living sort of no longer in the pages of the biblical worldview, but in its aftermath. But I think the very fact that Western civilization is rooted and grounded here means that you have many, many people who are thinking that we have to uproot Christianity as the dominant social, spiritual force in the West. And Islam seems to be viewed exactly the opposite. It's a religion of peace and tolerance, and therefore, in some naive way, to fill the vacuum with Islam doesn't seem onerous to secularists, to materialists, for this new faith that you're talking about, this new secularist ideology. And I think therein lies a naivete that could be, well, could see the very same thing happening here in America that's now starting to happen in many of the EU nations, not the most eastern ones like Poland and so forth that still respect their borders, but many of the EU nations like Switzerland or Sweden or Holland or England, you could name the list. The problem here that I'm getting you to comment on is just this idea of a dominant secularism which declares Christianity to be the worst of all religions and sort of naively welcomes Muslims as the best of our neighbors.
Yes, and it is really interesting in Europe right now to try and address this a bit. I mean, what we're seeing there is that you remember there was a big argument about whether the role of Christianity in European history should even be mentioned in the EU founding documents. And mostly Christians lost that one. So there has been this determined drive to get rid of anything that smacks about Christianity, you know, not only in France, which has always had laïcité, but in other countries as well. Now, I think one thing we've learned is that the new atheists were wrong to frame the discussion as there are people who believe and people who don't believe. Instead, everybody believes in something. The question is what? So to take it back to Europe, what we're seeing is that the ideology, the religion, the quasi-religion of the sexual revolution is what Europe has left, because most of the continent jettisoned purposely the Christian heritage. So when you're talking about immigrants acculturating to the countries of Europe these days, you're not talking about them learning Christianity. You're talking about them learning the quasi-religion of the sexual revolution, which is the one thing that the countries of Western Europe now agree upon. You gave the example of Iceland, you know, getting rid of kids with Down syndrome. Europe is ahead of us. Its theology of the sexual revolution is more developed than ours, but you're right, it's where we're pointing if we aren't careful. But the point is this: faced with the choice, well, do you choose your religion or do you choose the religion of the sexual revolution? The answer of the immigrants in Europe now is not to choose the religion of the sexual revolution. So as a competitor to traditional faith, it looks as if it doesn't hold up very well when it comes to commanding the loyalties of people who are actually in possession of a strong faith.
Well, we've run out of time for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. To listen to this Hank Unplugged podcast interview with distinguished author and cultural critic Mary Eberstadt in its entirety, go to equip.org, iTunes, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. If you'd like to stand shoulder to shoulder with Hank Hanegraaff and the Christian Research Institute in the battle for life and truth and receive as our thanks for your gift, It's Dangerous to Believe, Religious Freedom and Its Enemies by Mary Eberstadt, call our resource consultants now at 888-7000-CRI. 888-7000-CRI. Or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write to us at CRI, Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded solely by listeners like you. We're on the air because life and truth matter. Supporting the work of the Christian Research Institute is now as easy as sending a text message. Here's how you can help by texting your gift directly to CRI. To make a one-time gift to help equip fellow believers through the ongoing work of CRI, text TRUTH in all capital letters to 41444. That's TRUTH to 41444. To become a CRI support team member and make a difference on a regular basis, text STANDING in all capital letters to 91999. Again, that is STANDING to 91999. We do what we do here at CRI because life and truth matter. And all of our outreaches are made possible by people like you standing shoulder to shoulder with us to make a difference for now and for eternity. God bless you. Of Nancy Piercy's recent book, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality, Professor Robert P. George of Princeton University says, liberal secularist ideology rests on a mistake, and Nancy Piercy puts her finger right on it. In embracing abortion, euthanasia, homosexual conduct and relationships, transgenderism and the like, liberal secularism is philosophically as well as theologically untenable. Piercy is precisely clear about what makes humans valuable. Don't just read, master, love thy body. To receive your hardcover copy as our appreciation for your financial partnership, simply call 888-7000-CRI. And make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-transforming outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit equip.org.